2 hours ago, Allied Air Forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is In the News.
Welcome to In the News on Holy Family Radio, where we bring you the news with a Catholic perspective. I'm your host, Eleanor Rossman, and joining us again this week is Father John Trigilio. Father, welcome back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Good, good. We're so glad you're here. One of the stories in the news I wanted to bring up, there seems to be this anti-Catholic climate in France that's getting
terrible,
really bad. It says the French monitoring groups have cited an increase in attacks on churches and religious sites with a record 47 documented in February alone. This was despite appeals for better protection from the country's Catholic bishops. The report follows growing concern over anti-clerical incidents in France, where Catholics nominally make up around 54% of the population, according to surveys, but with only a small proportion attending Mass. What do you think's going on there?
Well, unfortunately, it goes back to the French Revolution, during the Reign of Terror, there was a very, very virulent anti-Catholic, anti-clerical reaction among some of the French.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they dug up nuns and monks who were dead for hundreds of years and desecrated their graves. There's an opera called Dialogue of the Carmelites that remembers when these nuns were sent to the guillotine just because they were nuns. So, the animosity and the vitriol against the Catholic Church among some of the French.
Yeah.
So this isn't necessarily being done by Muslim terrorists.
Okay.
Some of it is.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it's being done by French
nationals
who are either lapsed or fallen away Catholics, or they're just French secularists.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this big, I mean, you don't see that as much like in Italy. There's like in Bologna, there's some anti-clericalism because there's a pocket of Italian communists there. A tiny bit in Milan, but some in Bologna. But you don't see it as much, say, in Spain or in Italy. Spain, it did during the Civil War because the communists and socialists were also against the church. But France has this strong element of anti-clericalism that's never been completely eradicated. And on the opposite side of the equation, you have this strong resurgence of French traditional Catholics, where they're, they want to go to the extraordinary form society of Pius X and the Fraternity of St. Peter, so that, you've got in France this dichotomy of very staunch, very traditional expressions of Catholicism, mm-hmm. and then you've got the very leftist, secularist, anti-Catholic, anti-clerical French, and then everybody in between.
Yeah, it's very, very sad. My husband and I visited there at one time, and I was amazed even then, seeing so many beautiful churches and so many statues broken, demolished, artwork. It's so sad.
But they just had a case in Montreal.
Oh, that's right, about the priest that was stabbed.
He was stabbed.
Yeah. Catholic
that's,
Montreal,
that's
French.
I mean, that's French Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's not every single French. It's not every single French Canadian. But that French throwback from the Revolution, I think, it has a long history.
Father, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I want to bring something up in regards to the recent Vatican, well, it's not so recent now, but the summit on clergy sexual abuse in the church. And that is an article I was reading. It said the danger of conflating sexual abuse with abuse of power, because that was kind of an overriding theme there, that, you know, a lot of the problem is an abuse of power. And in this article said, well, you know, it took pains to downplay during the preparation execution of this summit, to downplay the sexual aspect of sexual abuse and to emphasize the abuse aspect, namely the abuse of power. The shift from chastity toward authority, from sexual morality to power dynamics, constitutes a shift toward a church that thinks in more worldly categories. The shift from chastity toward authority, from sexual morality to power dynamics. Okay. What are they talking about here? That we're shifting, the church is shifting in a more worldly, or thinking in a more worldly way.
Well, I think that the problem is, again, that they're trying to create a false dichotomy, and that you have to choose between either or.
Mm-hmm.
And remember what Pope Benedict said so many times, Catholicism is not a religion of either or, it's a religion of both and.
Okay.
And the current situation that we have, it's both and. It's both sexual deviation, predominantly homosexual phenomenon among clergy who are going after teenage or young adult males. There is some classified pedophilia, but the John Jay report points out, most of these cases involved post-pubescent males. Obviously there were girls that were abused, but the overwhelming majority. So this is a sexual issue, a sexual phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you had bishops who were covering things up, and that was a power issue.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say it's both things simultaneous. And some of it was because you had some bishops who were, like we saw with Cardinal McCarrick.
Yeah,
he was not only was he an abuser, but he was also someone who covered up for his friends and of like mind deviancy. So he did both the power issue and the sexual issue. And what I'm afraid of is that many people in the secular world are only looking now at the power issue, because they're saying, like in Hollywood, it's not really a sexual thing. It's an issue of dominance, that, you know, you're the boss and you're exerting power over your employee. That may be, in some cases, but even there, that's a sexual issue. If someone at work is sexually harassing or abusing someone, that's a sexual issue. I don't care what you want to add some dimension to it, that it has something to do with power. But again, it could be both sexual and power.
Yeah.
But they want you to choose either or.
Yeah,
and I say no.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting to me too, because what seems to feed it, okay, there is a power element to it, but what often feeds it is pornography, which is explicitly sexual. You know,
you
can't have the one without the other. I think that's got to be involved the majority of the time.
That plays a strong play in this, because a lot of these guys who act out started out with pornography, and then, you know, the thrill got lesser and lesser, so they had to up the ante, so to speak.
It's progressive. Mm-hmm. Father Cardinal Seurat, every time he comes out with a book, I pay attention. Cardinal Robert Seurat came out with a book to speak for the disoriented Catholics, what's been going on in the church and all this that we've been talking about. And he said a few things that are interesting. He said, the cause of the sexual abuse scandal, he added, can only be found in earlier betrayals. The crisis which the clergy, the church, and the world are going through is radically a spiritual crisis, a crisis of faith. And he says, in the article said, the African cardinal recalls that the mystery of Judas, words borrowed from Pope Francis, resides in moving away from the teachings of Jesus, and therefore can be compared with the mystery of evil in our time. That's kind of interesting to me, because it's you know, we're talking about whether it's a power issue, sexual, it's a spiritual crisis, right? And what does he mean by, do you think, the mystery of Judas? When people say, why would Jesus pick Judas as one of the 12 disciples when he knew he was going to betray him?
Well, the same question would be asked, why did God create Adam and Eve when he knew they were going to sin against them?
Right.
The point is there's free will. That even though God knows the future in terms of our linear timeline, even though he knows what we're going to do, he doesn't force that decision to take place.
Mm-hmm.
So he chose Judas. Judas could have chosen to repent, or he could have chosen not to betray him.
Mm-hmm.
Peter could have chosen not to betray him. Peter denied him three times, remember?
Peter
repented. Okay? And that's the key there, is that both of them sinned. One repented, one did not.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus did not choose 12 saints or even 11 saints. He chose 12 men mm-hmm. as his apostles. They were all sinners. Okay? None of them were without sin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just Judas who refused to ask for God's forgiveness. So the Judas effect, if you want to call it a Judas element, is that even though God knows there will be some people who will sin, and some sin terribly, and some even become evil, like Hitler or Stalin or whatever.
Yeah.
Still, the point is that they had free will.
Mm-hmm.
God never forced them to do what they did, and they could have at any moment chosen to change or do different. Or they could have changed. They could have decided at any moment not to do what they did.
Right.
So they were never predetermined. We do not believe in an absolute predestination to evil.
So up to the moment that Judas hung himself,
mm-hmm.
he still had the option to repent, didn't he?
He could have repented and been. Imagine he would have been exalted as even greater than not in terms of authority. But in terms of, like, look at the woman caught in adultery.
Yeah.
Okay? She was forgiven, and Jesus said to her, go and sin no more. And, you know, one of the traditions, it was never defined as fact, but one of the traditions was that she could have been Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
And look at what a great saint she became, although it was supposed by some popes that she had a life of prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, The jury's still out on whether that's actually the case with Mary Magdalene's past. But Fulton Sheen said he liked to think that's what happened because the worst sinner became his most faithful disciple.
Didn't Jesus say somewhere about, you know, whoever has more, you know, has sins have been forgiven, loves more? You know what I mean? So in other words, I'm thinking you could say for Judas, because he did such a horrible thing, that
he could have been one of the, I mean, and look at St. Paul.
Yeah.
St. Paul. As
oh,
Saul
yeah,
Tarsus,
there you go.
The worst enemy of the
mm-hmm,
church
right.
becomes the best ally.
Yeah. So never say never, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, Father, let's stop and take a quick break, and we'll be back within the news again with Father John Turgilio. Stay tuned.
Holy Family Radio would like you to know we very much appreciate you listening. We're here for you all day, every day. Listen online at 720WHYF.com and sunrise to sunset at 720 on your AM radio dial. Don't be a stranger. We'd like to know your thoughts and how we're doing. You can reach out to us by email. Our address is contact@720WHYF.com. That's contact@720WHYF.com.
We're back with Father John Turgilio and in the news on Holy Family Radio. Father, I was reading this recently that in California, a bill will threaten the seal of confession. Specifically, the bill would remove an exemption for penitential communications in an existing state law that designates more than 40 categories of professionals, clergy, physicians, teachers, counselors, etc. They're mandated reporters, and they face criminal penalties if they fail to report sexual and other mistreatment of children.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the law carves out a narrow exemption for information obtained during the Catholic sacrament of penance. They want to get rid of that. What's going to happen? What could happen?
Well, priests will go to jail because we're absolutely positively not allowed to divulge the secrets of the confession, even if the Pope were to ask us to. You have to be willing to die
mm-hmm.
rather than say what you heard at the confessional. Now, here's what's interesting. The same thing was taking place in Australia and other places around the world.
Mm-hmm.
If we went back to the ancient practice of anonymous confession behind a screen and behind a grill in a confessional, two things would happen. One, there's virtually no way a DA could call you into court, and even if you could divulge, there'd be no way that you could, with moral certitude, say who it was that was behind there, because if their face is hidden and their voice is covered because you've got a cloth there,
right?
I could never say with certitude who it was. So, but when I'm looking at them face to face, and I'm, you know, there, and there, and so that would be one benefit. And secondly, no one could ever accuse you of, nor could a deviant priest make an attempt to solicit someone sexually in the confessional if there was always that grill and that divide.
Boy, but
when
that's
you've got
true
the
too.
Open space, and someone could, you could be an innocent priest and someone could falsely accuse you of solicitation, and you've got no way of defending yourself.
Right.
So I think the bishops need to reevaluate that and say, that's why they did it in the Middle Ages, for the same reason, because people were accusing the priest of, you know, misbehaving or whatever, any number of things of abuses. So they said, look, you have to have a fixed grill and a cloth so that you don't see who it is. And there's no way that you could physically contact them.
Right. So why, you know what, that makes perfect sense to me, Father, that we should have that fixed grill. And frankly, you know, I tend to take longer when I go face to face. I don't, I try not to do it as much, but I tend to talk more. You know what I mean? And sometimes even the priest talks more. And sometimes you're in a line going to confession. And if somebody goes, I assume face to face, it goes on and on forever. So I think it's the danger, maybe not danger, but potentially that becomes a counseling session, you know?
Well, that's one of the minor aspects of it, that if that were the only thing, you could say, all right, we could put up with that. But, you know, the issue of us being called into court and the issue of either accusation of solicitation or the opportunity for solicitation would be removed by going back to the traditional confessionals that have a steel grill, a cloth, and you're in a box. There's just, I know some people say, well, we'd like to go face-to-face. Well, the higher good of the sacrament outweighs that. Because,
absolutely.
You know, because we priests, you know, we want to be able to say to the court, look, I couldn't if I wanted to because I don't know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they would give up their – but if they know you see them, they're going to push. And we priests are going to have to be willing to go to jail.
Right. Now, two things, Father. What happens to the person that wants to make a private appointment for confession because maybe they haven't gone for 25 years and they feel uncomfortable about, you know, giving
you... Well, in the past, you know, we used to say, okay, meet me in the office. But what I was starting to do my last couple of years as pastor was saying, I'll meet you in the church. And I saw them in the confessional.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that same reason.
Okay.
And especially someone's been away for a long, long time, they felt easier for them to go anonymously. If they've been away 30, 40, 50 years and they have a lot of sins and some of them are very nasty, they want to do it anonymously. So the face-to-face is not, you know, first of all, it's not mandatory. Mm-hmm. And secondly, priests have the option of saying, I don't want to do it that way. Rome has said that was our option.
Yeah.
So I know, like, the Fathers of Mercy, when they give a mission somewhere, they tell the pastor, I'm only hearing confessions anonymously.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us priests, we're going to jump on that bandwagon because the sanctity of the seal and the sanctity of the priesthood is such that, you know, it's not worth, you know, jeopardizing because it makes some people feel a little bit more at ease.
Yeah. The other question I was going to posit to you is that someone who, let's say, needs to go to confession because maybe they did touch someone, a child, God forbid, inappropriately, will they be less inclined to go to confession?
Oh, absolutely. If they suspected that, you know, but obviously I have to assure everyone that it would never happen, that no priest. And here's something that's interesting. 2,000 years of church history, okay? When's the last time you heard of a priest who went bad? Let's say a priest who became a pedophile, who left the church, who became a communist or an atheist or whatever, and then wrote a book about all the sins he heard. It's never happened.
Right.
Even the worst of the worst have kept the secrets to their death.
Yeah.
That's the work of the Holy Spirit.
Right.
So that people know that whatever they tell the priest, he can never, ever tell. And otherwise, you have had instances where guys who left the priesthood who hate the church because they left.
Right.
They would have taken that opportunity. They would have made a mint, selling their book or going on TV. But even the worst of the worst have not done that.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Because it's so sacrosanct.
Right. Well, we'll be watching this and see what happens. Father, under the category of where else can I not shop, okay, Walmart apparently is selling satanic products. Now, I will say this is on their online catalog. It has about 440 items of demonic merchandise. For example, demonic sculptures and figures, satanic pornography that blasphemes Christ's crucifixion, numerous products and jewelry with pentagrams and other demonic images, and books that include the Satanic Bible and books on spells. Now, this article that was talking about this said, just as religious objects such as a miraculous medal connects us with the Blessed Mother and a crucifix with Jesus, an exorcist said, that similarly, wearing an icon of something satanic opens up a person to possibly have a demonic presence. So two issues there, the danger of these kind of things, and what in the heck is wrong with Walmart?
Well, those are two good questions. And one, I have to say that it's true. Ouija boards, tarot cards, anything of the occult, I tell people do not have in your house pentagrams and the like, mm-hmm. because these artifacts don't have magical powers. However, their very presence in your home is like a calling card to the demons to say, hey, you're welcome here. So you don't want to send out a party invite to the demons.
A party invite.
Okay?
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And if I haven't seen this, so I can't say with moral certitude, but if indeed Walmart is doing this, then, we should not patronize them.
And
they need to be told. It's not enough that you say, I'm not going to shop there.
Right.
You need to tell the manager.
Yeah.
Go to the manager and say, I refuse to patronize your store as long as that stuff is here.
Yeah. Well,
because if they did something that mm-hmm. offended Islam,
forget it.
And Muslims complain, it would be taken out right away.
Right. All right. Well, contact a Walmart customer service at 479-273-4000, 479-273-4000. Yeah. And let them know at your local store, just stop in, but also at that number because it is the catalog. And they might, if they tell you that we also have Christian items in the catalog, what do you say to that, Father? If they try to defend their stance.
What other religions are you offending?
Yeah.
Why is it Christianity?
Yeah.
Judeo-Christian Christianity alone that you offend? You're going to offend one religion, you offend them all, or you should better yet offend none.
Along the same vein, there's an elementary school. I think this is in Houston or somewhere. An elementary school principal introduced a yoga-based meditation into the classrooms at her school. It was based on the book called Peaceful Piggy Meditation. Well, the Christian parents objected, good for them. They sent her to another school, but now she's suing. In this book, Peaceful Piggy Meditations, for example, it encourages students, now these are elementary especially, find a special place where mom or dad would set them up with maybe a crystal for clear thinking, a stone for stillness, a flower for kindness. I mean, can you believe, is this time to pull your kids out of a school like that? I mean.
Oh, I would. I would pull them out immediately.
You know, it's ridiculous that we have these conversations. And here, back in Houston, boy, they have trouble down there. At the Houston Public Library, they had to admit that they allowed a registered child sex offender to participate in its drag queen reading program for children. Well, for one thing, why are they even having a drag queen reading program for children?
Isn't that obscene?
What's the upside to that?
Totally obscene.
Totally obscene.
Even if that person who was doing that wasn't a sex offender.
Yeah, right.
The fact that you're exposing little kids to deviancy, okay? You're exposing them to deviancy, all right? Let's bring in drug addicts. Let's bring in,
heroin addicts and show them how to shoot up.
Terrorists and, gangsters. And just, expose them to all the depravity that's out there. Of course you wouldn't want that to happen. But what parents sit back and let their kid go to such a school?
Exactly. It's when they know about it, that is. But you're going to love this one. The library said it deeply regrets performing this essential safety check, but attempted to downplay the risk put the children in by stressing that the program is supervised by library staff.
Yeah.
that makes it all okay. Well, Father, once again, we come to the end of another show. You make things go by so quickly because we appreciate all of your insights on what's happening in the news. And we invite all of our listeners to join us every Thursday at noon on AM 720 on Holy Family Radio for In the News with Father John Trigilio. Father, God bless you and thank you for being
with
us.
Thank you.